Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we're located at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas, and we hold services on Sundays at 9:30 and 11:05 a.m. You can also find us online on Facebook, Twitter, and our website, gostonebridge.com. Today, Pastor Steve Bradley shares from our series, Did Jesus Start a Revolution? Here's Pastor Steve.
All right, good morning. We started this series called, Did Jesus Come to Start a Revolution? And you know, one of the things that happens with a lot of revolutions is everything gets thrown out. All the laws, all the rules get thrown out. And for a lot of people, that's what they think happened when Jesus came, that, you know, he just got rid of all the rules and so therefore, I can just do whatever I want to do and whatever I feel like doing. And the problem with that, of course, is it doesn't really make any difference. It doesn't really bring any change. And so this morning, I want to talk to you about, you know, where does obedience fit? Knowing this, that when I use that word obedience or that word obey, right, we're not real comfortable with it. Everybody agree? But I got to do a lot of weddings over the past, you know, 30 years since I was 3 years old. And, you know, okay, over, you know, a long time. And one of the things that I always love to do is I'll get the groom and the groomsmen together, and I'll say, you know, when we walk out there, you know, do you want me to say, you know, wives, obey your husbands, and whatever he says goes. And, you know, so it's your word, and you're the law. And a lot of times, guys will just absolute panic. They'll go like, you know, they'll just freeze up. Every once in a while, I'll say, yes, that's what they want. I know a lot of people are like, what are you about to say that? So I don't do that. Just to let you know, I do set them up that way just to get them a little fearful. When you get married, you should be a little fearful. A lot of people struggle with that word. And what does that mean? And what does that obligate me to? And how am I going to be judged as far as that is concerned? But the truth is, when Jesus came and Jesus started this revolution that he started, Jesus spent a lot of time talking about, in fact, it's in your outline, what and whom you were to obey. I mean, he just said, you know, this is a major thing. In fact, this is really what the gospel is all about, the fact that he is coming to free us so that we can obey and follow and trust and put our hope and trust in God himself, right? That's really what it was about. Remember, we talked about that Adam and Eve, you know, they're in the garden. They walk with God. They have this relationship with God. Is it a relationship of obeying? Of course it is. It's God's garden. He created them. And when they go against him, when sin enters the picture, that is exactly what happened, is they went a different direction and said, no, we've chosen a different path. And this is what they find. Something in that choice has come to live inside of me. And last week we talked about that this is exactly what Paul says, you know, who's a guy who learned to live by the law. And a change occurs in his life. And if you want to go back and read it in Romans chapter number 7, Paul says, you know, but there's something going on inside of me that I don't know how to deal with. It's hard to identify. He says, and this is how I know that there's something that lives inside of me. He says, the things that I want to do that I know I should do, I do not what? Do. That's exactly right. And the things that you know, I say I shouldn't be doing those things, I shouldn't be participating in those things I actually what? Yeah, and all this doing stuff that he gets into, he says, here's what it's an evidence of. It shows clearly that I want to do the right thing. There's a part of me that says I know I should do the right thing, but I don't do the right thing, which is a clear evidence that there's something living inside of me that is causing me to do those things that I don't know how to control and I don't know how to deal with. In fact, if you go all the way back to Adam and Eve, their story, you notice that when they did the wrong thing, they hide. That's what they do. And I always like to say that sin will make you dumb. It will, because they hide from the one person who can rescue them, God himself. And just to show you how dumb sin makes you, they know they need to hide, so they make clothing in the garden for the first time. And do you know, what do they pick to make clothing out of? Does anybody know? Fig leaves, that's right. Has anybody ever been around fig trees? That's the last leaf you would ever want to make clothing out of. Let me just go ahead and tell you, because I've been around them when I was a kid, and they are prickly, and they, I mean, so, you know, what were you thinking? And God ends up having to make some clothing suitable for them. But the fact that they would go away and hide, it shows something is wrong. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know really how to fix it, so I go away and hide. In fact, this is absolutely Jesus' illustration that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where he says, you know, you don't light a lamp. You don't get a torch, put a light on it, and then cover it with a big pot. That wouldn't make any sense. The whole point of it is it gives light, and it functions in this way. The fact that you would cover it with a pot would mean something's wrong with the light. It's not really working, because that's the only reason I would cover it, because otherwise I let it shine like it's supposed to shine. And the hiding part of it says something's wrong. Don't know what it is. Don't know how to fix it. I do see the actions that come from it, and I struggle with those things. But how do I find an answer, you know, for those things that I'm struggling with inside? So I had something I was going to do, and I completely have gone blank. Just to let you know, that does happen to me. And, I know, it was on the bottom of your outline, the big question. You know, with sin, here's the big question is how you need to look at it, because this is where we struggle as far as our sins are concerned. And here's the big question. Does this help me what? Down the road. Not just, you know, does this make me feel good right now? Is this what I want to do right this moment? But does this help me down the road? And this is what sin does to us. It brings in this control in our life that causes us to bite on things and to go after things that really don't help us down the road. They feel good for the moment. Sin is always fun for the moment, right? I'll always have some people, every time when I did this first time years and years ago, some people said, I don't like when you say that, but it's true. So, you know, I guess they're afraid it will make it worse or something like that. But, you know, people don't sin because it feels bad. Is that a good way to put it? They sin, they do those things because it feels good for a little while. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't feel good. The consequences of it come. Being separated from God is a huge consequence. And they're like, why am I still doing these things? And what God does is he comes in, he deals with our sin. That's exactly what Jesus did when he went to the cross. He's nailed on the cross. And like we said last week, what died on the cross? Do you remember what died on the cross? My sin. So that it no longer has power over you, and you don't have to obey it anymore. You don't have to follow it anymore. Now, I know you say, but I do. I know we do. But you don't have to anymore. It no longer has power over you. In fact, we spoke part of what Paul wrote in Romans chapter 6. Remember, we said, sin is no longer what? My master. Say that with me this morning. Sin is no longer my master. It's not. Not after what Jesus Christ did. Sin is no longer your master. In fact, I will tell you, practically in life, if you will learn to say this to yourself and remind yourself of this, some people would say, if you will declare this, you know, it does make a difference. When you are tempted, when you're struggling, as you go about your life, if you will remind yourself, sin is no longer my master. Now, if you're in the mall, don't say it too loudly, because people will say, what is that guy? Who is that? And they'll probably ask you to stand in a booth somewhere. But, you know, but it's a good thing to say to yourself. It's a good thing to remind yourself of. Sin is no longer my master. Not because of what Jesus Christ did. Sin no longer has that same power over me that it once had. So I want to take you to John chapter number 15. This is where Jesus, he has his disciples together. It's part of the long in John. John records a lot of Jesus' last teachings and his words to his disciples at the end of his life. And really, really key stuff, important stuff for them to remember. And I will remind you, this is not Jesus speaking to the multitudes or the crowds. This is Jesus absolutely speaking to those who say, we believe him, we trust him, we follow him, we are Jesus' followers, and he's reminding them of some things that they will, it's imperative that they remember these things and that they hold on to these things for the rest of their lives. And this is what Jesus says. This is John 15:1. He says, say this with me this morning. I am the what? grapevine, and my father is the... Now, I know you're like, so what is that all about? Well, it's because they understood growing grapes. That it was part of the industry for them. You know, they use them to produce wine and I guess other things. And so this was a relationship or a job that they absolutely would have understood. They knew what a grapevine was for, right? Here's what a grapevine is for. I heard it through the grapevine. Okay, I'm sorry. That was, it says Gladys Knight and the Pips, but I don't remember her doing that. It's, you know, it's for gossip, but let's do the real grapevine here. You know what grapevines are for? They grow what? That's what they're for. They produce something. And you have grapevines for the product of it. They understood that. But here's what they also understood that you and I might miss sometimes. Even though the showy part, the part that we like of the grapevine is the leaves, maybe the blooms, you know, smell real well, but especially the product, the grapes themselves, that's not the whole thing that makes up the grapevine, right? There is the vine itself. And the vine is what provides the nourishment, the strength, the life to the branches on the grapevine. And the branches then produce the leaves, the flowers, and the grapes, right? The produce of it. But it has to be attached. The branches have to be attached to the vine to have life. And I know that you say, well, yeah, it makes sense. But Jesus is saying, listen, this is going to be the same way with you. You have to be attached to the vine in order to have life. If you break the branch off, because that's the showy part, and you might do that, you know what will happen, right? Quickly, what's going to happen to the leaf? It's going to wither. It's going to, you know, it's going to droop, and the vine, the branch itself will sort of droop. Maybe it will grow dry and brittle. And if you don't do something with the grapes pretty, you know, quickly, you're going to have raisins. So, you know, this is just what happens to the branches when they are detached from the vine itself. And the vine dresser understands this. The vine dresser works and deals with the plants based on this one thing. They need to stay attached to the vine. That's where strength comes from. And that's where the product will come from. It's the same way with you and I. Look at the next verse, verse 2. Jesus says, talking about the vine dresser, he says, he cuts off every branch of mine that doesn't produce fruit. And he prunes the branches that do bear fruit. Why? So that they will what? Produce even more. So he says, look, you understand this. This makes sense. It also makes sense with God. He removes the branches that are not producing. They're just taking strength and nourishment from the vine, but they're not producing. And the ones that are producing, he's going to cut them also. He's going to snip them. You may not like it. You may say, God, what are you doing? But he's going to work on you also so that you will produce more, so that the product grows. And they would absolutely say, well, of course, that's what a good vine dresser is supposed to do. Look at the next verse. He says, you've already been pruned and purified by the message I've given you. This is Jesus speaking to them. In fact, let me remind you of this. If you are a believer, you're a follower, and you may be here and you say, well, not me. I'm not so sure about this, you know, Jesus stuff. Okay, that's all right. But if you are a follower, this is what you understand. It is the things that he has spoken to you that have pruned you and cut back parts of you in order to make your life more productive. That's the whole purpose of it. In fact, if you are not producing more, if you feel like, well, you know, I just feel like nothing is going on, then just stop for a minute and go back and ask this one question. So, am I listening? You know, do I pick this up and read this and say, your words, they prune, they cut back, they cause my life to become more productive, because that's exactly the point of his words and what he does. Next verse says this, verse 4, he says, remain in me and I will remain in you. For a branch cannot produce fruit if it is severed from the vine, and you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. Makes sense, doesn't it? You get detached, you get separated, you're not going to remain fruitful anymore. You're no longer going to produce what you're supposed to produce. Next verse 5, he says, yes, I'm the vine, you're the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. And then he goes on to say, anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch and withers. Such branches are gathered into a pile to be burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may, look at this part, you may ask for anything you want and it will be granted to you. And that doesn't mean, you know, you can just go around and say, okay, new car. You know, it's not, this is not some game show, right? But when, as you remain in him and you say, this is where my life comes from. This is what I was made for. As you remain in him, then the things that you need, you know, you're struggling. You're in difficult situations. You know, you understand this. The things that you need, you ask. And the vine is going to provide what you need because the vine is intent on production. The vine dresser is intent on production. So the things that you need to produce, the things that you absolutely have to have, he's going to provide those things for you. He is the source of those things in your life. Verse number 8, Jesus goes on to say, when you produce much fruit, you are my true disciples. That means this is the reason you follow him. This brings great glory to the Father. Absolutely, because the vine is producing. The branches are producing. I've loved you. I've loved you even as the Father has loved me. He says, remain in my love. In verse 10, he goes on to say, when you obey my commands, you remain in my love. Just as I obey my Father's commands and remain in his love. Is obedience a part of it? Absolutely. It has to be. It's a part of the attachment. Would the branches be attached and drawing their life and their and everything about how they produce if they were not, in a sense, obeying? Of course they wouldn't. They'd be separated if they weren't doing that. And it's so easy for us to somehow think, you know what, I've become a Christian. I've become a follower of him. Now I'm going to go off and produce. I'm going to go off and do what I want to do. And he's supposed to give me what I want. But to sever ourselves and to lose the connection and then down the road, not immediately, doesn't happen immediately, feels good kind of initially, but down the road, start saying, I don't understand what's going on. I don't understand why I don't feel the same way that I felt before. Why I've just sort of lost the enthusiasm that I once had. Why I just don't seem to sense or feel his power, his strength living inside of me and working inside of me. What am I doing? I'm trying to produce. I'm trying to do all the good things I'm supposed to do, and we don't understand what's going on. And what Jesus is trying to say, because he knew the disciples needed to understand this, if they missed this down the road, they would mess the whole thing up. Listen, if you lose the connection, if you sever yourself, if you're not attached to the vine, if you don't love the Father, if you don't love the Son, if you don't obey, I mean, that's a part of the relationship. It's not that in your obedience you're going to earn your relationship with God. It's just this is where you're supposed to be. This is where you will find your life. This is where you will find your strength is in this relationship. And it changes everything as you grasp that, hold onto that, and you decide that's what I'm going to do with my life. My wife, last couple of days, she's been playing a tape by Tommy Nelson. And if you've ever heard Tommy Nelson, he's a great preacher. Some dynamic stuff. But she's studying in 1 Samuel, but she was playing one of his tapes. And Tommy actually talks about this, and it's one of the struggles, confession, one of the struggles that preachers have. And that is to go out and try to produce. You know, so you read the Bible, you study, you say, God, you know, give me insight, give me wisdom. But all this time, you're out trying to produce, and you forget that you have to have a relationship. And that if you lose that relationship, you might be able to produce for a while, but at some point in your own life, in your own personal life, you will begin to feel dry. You'll begin to feel like, I don't know why I do these things. I don't know if they really matter anymore. It's easy to get led astray or to move in the wrong direction because you've lost your connection to the vine. Listen, that's true of all people. I know you think, well, it can't be true of preachers. You're not supposed to do that, but it is. If it's just about you trying to produce, then the problem is you will lose the source, the strength, where the production comes from. And eventually you have no choice. You'll dry up. It's just going to happen. You're not going to be producing grapes anymore. You know, you just have a few raisins left over from what you did before, right? And that's all that will be left, because you've lost the connection. He knew they had to remain in him, and they had to understand how important this was. So in verse number 11, he says, I've told you these things so that you will be filled with joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. He was concerned about them. This is my commandment. Love each other in the same way I have loved you. And then he goes on to explain this. He said, there's no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friend. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you slaves, because a master doesn't confide in his slaves. Now you are my friends since I have told you everything the Father told me. And then he goes on to say, you didn't choose me, I chose you. I appointed you to go and produce lasting fruit so that the Father will give you whatever you're asking for using my name. And then he says, this is my command. Love one another. Now, it's not just, this is for this group. Love one another. This is what it means to be in the relationship, to be in the fellowship, to abide with him, is to imitate him, is to do the things that he would do, because that's where your strength is coming from. That's the whole source of your life. Love one another. Let me give you a couple of things about how I think obedience fits from this passage, and you may pick out a few more, and it'd be great. You can email me those, but let me give you just five things that I thought that kind of jump out pretty clear, and I'll use another example also about how obedience does fit. First of all, obedience fits because it puts you in the right spot for the right time in your life. See, you may feel like, I don't know why I'm in this place. I don't know why I'm going through these things. It just seems like, God, I had better dreams and better plans than this. This is not what I wanted. But God is guiding you. God will put you in places sometimes that you think, you know, this is not the right place, so that you will learn and so that you will grow and that so that you will be prepared that one day the right timing comes and you are in absolutely the right place for how God has prepared you in life. Now, you won't be able to predict this. You will have to trust him, stay connected, knowing that God will do this. And one day that's what happens. One day you sort of wake up and you go, oh my goodness, this is why God took me through all these things. This is why God tried to teach me and actually took me through some difficult situations to stay connected, to stay strong, because he knew one day I would end up here and this is what I would need to be in this place. And now, you know, now I understand why he did this. I love the Old Testament. In fact, I'll tell you that a lot of people make a mistake not reading the Old Testament and not learning from the stories in the Old Testament, because they are so real, and many times they're such vivid stories that if you read them and you learn from them, you will learn a lot about what it means to believe and trust and stay close to God. And one of my favorite stories out of the book of Genesis is the story of Joseph, right? And Joseph is a 17-year-old boy who his brothers become jealous, and they sell him to some slave traders at 17. They take him off to Egypt, and they sell him to a guy named Potiphar. He is the captain of the Pharaoh's guards, and he becomes his slave. And for the next 13 years, people forget how long he was there, 13 years, Joseph is a slave, except that it gets worse. In their day, and this is what Egypt was all about, you know, it's about who you are and the power that you have, not whether or not what you did was right or wrong. So Joseph is accused by Potiphar's wife at some point of being sexually aggressive with her. And the truth was, she tried to entice him. He refused her. And so she decided to punish him. And Potiphar knows, but Potiphar comes back, and Potiphar is basically like, this is the way it works. You know, you're a slave. She is the wife of the captain of the guard. So if she accuses you, it doesn't matter if you're guilty or not. You're guilty. And so he gets sent off to prison. And there in prison, you would think, man, it's even worse, you know, for Joseph. But instead, while he's in prison, God sets him up so that Joseph will eventually catch the ear of the Pharaoh himself, and he will eventually, at 30 years old, be moved into the position of the second most powerful man in the world next to Pharaoh. And it was just God's timing. Now, I know that when you look at Joseph's life, in fact, a lot of people like to do this and say, you know, Joseph, there's a lot in there about him just trusting God and being faithful. There's really not. It's just, here's Joseph's situation. And Joseph, in one sense, almost has no other choice. I mean, he could have, you know, just deserted God or saying, where is God? But Joseph apparently did choose to believe God and trust God. And the reason you know that is every time Joseph is given the opportunities in a situation where he can do what feels good or what would seem like is good for him, Joseph chooses to do what he knew God would want him to do instead, even if it cost him. And I know you might think, yeah, how did that work out, right? Slave, now he's in prison. Now it worked out really well because there's no way Joseph, by his own skill or craft, comes to that position unless he learns obedience, unless he learns through all of his trials and his difficulties to say, God is still going to be faithful. God is still watching after me. God still has a plan. That's the only way. Because what happens, if you remember Joseph's dream that he interprets, he says, you're going to have 7 years of plenty, right? Everything's going to go great. Then we're going to have 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh is left with this dilemma. Okay, so who are we going to put in charge? Because what I need is someone that I can put in charge, and they want, during the 7 years of plenty, they want eat everything, they want profit, you know, take advantage of that, so that when we hit the 7 years of plenty, we're without. And what Pharaoh understands is, I can't do it. You don't want to trust me with it. And Pharaoh looks at his whole staff, and he says, I have no one that I could trust with that. No, there's absolutely no way. And they look around, and they say, well, then where could we find someone with that kind of moral integrity, that learned that kind of obedience to the task? And they're like, here he is. 13 years he's learned it. Here's a guy you can trust. And Joseph was the person that they could trust. Joseph didn't know that. He didn't know that's where his life would lead. God did. And God understood that if Joseph would trust him, if Joseph would be faithful, he would be prepared for that day, for that task, for that position that God had planned for him all along. Let me ask you this question. Do you believe... Do you trust that God is looking after your life and that God has such wonderful plans for you that if you would just learn love and obedience for him, that down the road, maybe not immediately, but down the road, man, there's no telling what God would do in my life. Because that's the kind of God he is. That's what he promises us. And the things that we need, God promises, I will supply those things. But you have got to decide that you're going to stay in the game, that you're going to stay attached, that you're in, not, you know, just out on your own. Prepares us for the right time, right place. Second thing is, obedience fits because it powers you up. And you see this certainly in Joseph's life. It makes us stronger. You know, Joseph was a man that you could not have fashioned his life in any other way except by the things that he went through and the obedience that he's learned. Third thing is this, wherever you are, it helps you to become successful. And that was true of Joseph's life. In fact, you know, the one thing you look at Joseph's life, he was successful everywhere he was planted. He was successful as a slave because Potiphar looked at him and said, you know what, here's a guy that can be trusted, so I will give him charge of my whole household. That's why he found himself in the bad situation with Potiphar's wife, because he had the run of the household. He could do whatever he wanted to. Potiphar trusted him. He's in prison. The head of the prison says, you know, here's a guy I can trust. Puts him in a position like that, because everywhere that Joseph went, Joseph actually was successful because Joseph learned obedience. He learned faithfulness. And then the fourth thing is this, it makes you unashamed. You see, let me go ahead and tell you, I'm not ashamed of the fact that I can't sky dunk a basketball. Just want to let you know. You know why? I'm not capable. That's not what God, how God made me. Now, in my dreams, I can. But, you know, in reality, I can't do that. I can't slam dunk behind my, you know, my back. But there are things that I can do. And rather than looking at the things that I can't do, you know, what God wants to do is to shape us for the things that we can do. And to miss those things is what brings shame to our life. You know, I could have. I should have. God made me for it, but I miss those things. And it's in that connection, in that relationship, that we find the strength to become the people we're supposed to be. And we're not going to be ashamed in whatever situation we are, because we become the people that God plans for us. And the fifth thing, I love this one. It clarifies love. That's what obedience does. My wife was in the earlier service, so I did this to her. I picked on her. I can't pick on her as well here. But, you know, when we got married, obey was not in her vows either. And I just go ahead and tell you that my wife does not walk around and says, oh, I obey him. Absolutely not. But here's what she does do. She loves me because she obeys, guess who? And that's what she's called to. And so he has placed her in this relationship with a man that's not a perfect man. I'm real close, but I'm not a perfect man. I have plenty of struggles. And she loves me because she obeys and she trusts God himself. And it's a stretch sometimes. Let me tell you, you know, it means she has to spend time and run back and say, okay, God, are you sure? You know, and yeah, absolutely. But it clarifies love. It will do the same thing with you. To go back and to obey and to follow and to trust and say, look, you understand me. You're the one that made me in this way. It will clarify the love in your life, the things that you should love, the things that you should hold on to, and the things you should say, you know what, that's just not what he's called me to. That's not what I'm supposed to be a part of. Jesus, the last week of his life, he understood that the disciples would struggle. As Jesus went on trial, he's falsely accused. Same thing, the powers to be in his day decided he's guilty, whether he's guilty or not. And Jesus understood that. He was okay with that. But he knew that his disciples would struggle with that. How do you overcome that? How does that work? But Jesus knew the Father would be faithful. And the Father would use Jesus' life. That he would use his sacrifice to literally change the world. And he did, didn't he? Because from one man and from those few that were following him, no armies, no governments, no media. From those things, Jesus Christ literally reshaped the world, life after life after life after life, because it was real, it was genuine, it works, it has power to it, because we are called to know him in a way that we could not know him before, and now he has provided that way. That's exactly what Jesus Christ did. So we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper together. Remember the sacrifice that he made for us. We're going to celebrate together because we've all been pulled into this. Different stages, different places, but together we're called to encourage one another, push one another on, spur one another on because of what Christ himself has done. So would you pray with me this morning? Heavenly Father, thank you that you understood us. You knew us. In fact, you knew us so well that you knew we could not fix our own problems, even though we would try and try and try and try. And so you fixed what we could not fix. You sent your Son into this world to live a perfect life, to struggle with the same temptations, the same struggles that we go through, yet he would live a sinless life so that he could offer himself in payment for our sins, so that we would be free, so that sin would no longer be our master, because we had a new master, a new king who loved us, brought us back to the place that we were created to be, the place where we would gain strength, we would gain insight, we would gain power in our life, being close to you once again. you're here this morning and you've never opened up your heart to Jesus Christ, maybe you've thought that Christianity was all about just trying to be a good person, you never realized before that we all understand that part failed. And that God sent His Son to do what you could not do for yourself, to bring you back to a relationship with the Father, a relationship the Father's always wanted to have, so that you could become the person that God created you to be, that He wanted you to be. And that would bring glory to your Creator, to the Father. In Jesus' name we pray.